This morning we began a new series which will last 3 weeks in total. It discusses people of the Old Testament that had a great character about them, which we're going to discuss and discover. This morning we talked about the faith of Abraham and discussed how that there are three things in his life that identified him to be a person of faith. And tonight we're talking about the will or the strong will of Moses. And that's one word that I can think about to summarize what Moses is all about. He was someone that was very strong-willed. And that's not meant in any kind of derogatory way whatsoever. I know sometimes we call someone stubborn, like a donkey, when they're sometimes strong-willed. But for good reason, Moses had that strong will to be a part of his character, which allowed him to be the person that God needed him to be. This did not mean the fact that he was stubborn beyond the point of not being sinless. He was someone that was human like all of us, but when he did take a stand on something that was important, you knew exactly where he stood on that particular issue. And so for tonight, discussing the characteristic which best describes Moses, in my opinion, the idea of strong will, let's look over in Exodus chapter 2 together. Exodus chapter 2. Again, if you weren't here this morning, this is not my new voice. This is a temporary one. Exodus chapter 2. No, I'm good. I've had too many today. All right, Exodus chapter 2 and verse 11 to begin. Now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren and looked at their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian, and he hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two Hebrew men were fighting. And he said to the one who did the wrong, "Why are you striking your companion?" And he said, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed that Egyptian?" So Moses feared and said, "Truly this thing is known." When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian. He sat down by a well. Now, the first thing I want to mention about why we see him as being someone who is strong-willed is in this action of killing the Egyptian taskmaster. That's so significant to us because looking at Moses at this point of time in his life, he's not prepared to be the person God needs him to be. He's not ready. He may think that he's ready, but he's not been prepared the way that he should. If we look over in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24, we get a little bit more insight into the mindset of Moses at this point in time. Hebrews 11 and verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater the riches and the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, but he endured as seeing him who is invisible. So the insight that we learn from this particular passage here in Hebrews 11 is the fact that Moses did not identify himself as belonging to Pharaoh's household. He thought of himself first and foremost as a Hebrew. And that's so important because we learn that because of that, that motivation, that action of where he thought he belonged, that's what led him to kill the Egyptian taskmaster to try and redeem his people one person at a time from that captivity. Now, he wasn't ready for that because the people were not willing to accept Moses as their deliverer, as their judge, nor was Moses ready to actually bite the bullet and give himself as a sacrificial leader of the people. He easily could have stayed within the king's household and lived in luxury and wealth all his life, but he identified himself as being a Hebrew and sought to that end redeem them from captivity. Now, for a very basic application for us Christians, where do we see ourselves belonging? Do we look out into the world and what they consider to be correct and acceptable and do our best to try and conform to that image to fit in? Or do we recognize the truth that that's not truly where we belong, and that we should conform ourselves to the image of Christ as time goes on, and the world can see that contrast and be interested in what we've actually done? So again, Moses identifying himself as a part of his true family of God, the Hebrew nation at that point in time, was pivotal to motivate him to be strong-willed and almost stubborn to try and be next to his people. The second action I want to focus on this evening, talking about the strong will of Moses, is recorded in Exodus chapter 32. Let's turn that together. Exodus 32. Now, in Exodus 32, we have a very pivotal moment in the history of the Hebrew nation, because Moses leaves them for some period of time. And in doing so, having Moses and the leadership leave to go up the mountain of Sinai to talk with God, left the people and Aaron to their own devices for just a little while. And in doing so, it seems like they felt alone. They felt that God had left them because Moses had left them. And in doing so, they wanted to serve something. So they made this golden calf to worship as the God that bought them or redeemed them from Egyptian captivity. And obviously, God was not well pleased with that action. But if we look over in verse 7, Moses is given the instruction about why he was to return from the mount to go down to the people once again because their actions were becoming dishonorable. In verse 7, again, Exodus 32, verse 7, "And the Lord said to Moses, 'Go down, for your people whom you brought from the land of Egypt, they have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them, and they've made for themselves a golden calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt." And the Lord said to Moses, 'I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people.'" That word obviously means it's someone who is stubborn, someone who is not easily controlled. Verse 10, "Now therefore, let me alone," or leave me to my own devices, "that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, in order that I may make a great nation of you." Now, leaving at that particular verse here in verses 9 and 10, it's a very interesting temptation placed before Moses. Now, we know that God doesn't tempt any man, but it would have been tempting to have Moses to be in this situation to where he knows this stubborn nation is going to go back into sin over and over and over again. And Moses, as the intercessor or intercessory for this group of people, is going to have to stick his own neck out to stand up for them. It would have been easier in the long run for Moses to say, "You know what, God, just forget the promises you made about making a great nation from this family. Wipe them all out and start over, making me the new Abraham." That would have been a very tempting position for Moses to be in. But fortunately, he was not the same person he was when he killed that Egyptian. He wasn't looking to exalt himself as a prince or a redeemer of the people. He was humbled by his own actions enough to recognize that God was the redeemer, and he was simply the one to help facilitate that redemption process. So a second way that we see Moses as someone who is very strong-willed is he refused to compromise on the promise of God. Again, looking here in verse 11, Exodus 32 and verse 11. "But Moses implored the Lord his God and said, 'O Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians say, with evil intent did he bring them out, to kill them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth? Turn from your burning anger and relent against the disaster against your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel," or Jacob, "your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, 'I will multiply your offerings as the stars of heaven,' or your offspring rather, 'as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have promised I will give to your offspring, and they shall inherit it forever.'" And here's verse 14, the result of Moses saying these things. "And the Lord relented from the disaster that he had spoken of bringing on his people." So this is just one instance, by the way, of a time where the people went into sin. God wanted to just wipe them off the face of the earth and start over fresh. But Moses stuck his own neck out there, as stiff-necked as it was, to speak up for the people that needed someone to petition on their behalf. Now, the obvious teaching from this is Moses is showing us that as a sinful nation of God, we need someone that will speak up on our behalf. Moses did that for the Israelites, but thanks be to God, we have Jesus the Christ, who knows what God needs to have satisfaction from a sense of justice. But he also understands the temptations that we go through living on this physical earth. So he is the perfect individual to be the intercessory between God and mankind. And because Moses was so strong-willed, so stubborn, he was willing to show us that need even this ancient day. The very last thing that I want to mention tonight for you about why he was so strong-willed is he accepted the consequences of his actions. Moses was not Jesus. He was a type of Christ, but he was not sinlessly perfect. If we look over in Numbers chapter 20 together, in Numbers chapter 20, let's begin reading in verse 1. Verse 2, rather. Now there was no water for the congregation, and they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. Now, immediately, this is a very common thing for the Israelites. As soon as something seems to go wrong, who do they target? The leadership. All right, elders, deacons, folks who are in charge of something around here. When something goes wrong, it should not be a surprise to us that folks have the tendency to immediately blame folks they perceive to be in control of certain situations, right? I've been blamed for a lot of things that are way beyond my control. That goes to the territory, right? So here, verse 3, and they quarreled against Moses and said, would that we have perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Why have you brought the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness that we should both die here, both we and our cattle? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is no place for grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, and there is no water to drink. So again, a very common complaint here. The people said, why did you force us to follow you to salvation, making us walk behind you through the Red Sea to safety from the Egyptian army and slavery and death? Why'd you make us do this just to come all the way out here to die because we have no water and no food? Obviously, they were acting a tad bit emotional instead of logical from this situation. In verse 6, then Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly into the entrance of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the staff, assemble the congregation, you and Aaron your brother, and tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water. And so you shall bring water out of the rock for them, and give drink to the congregation and their cattle. And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. Now we have to understand where Moses is mindset-wise at this point in time. He has been the intercessor, the intercessory person, on behalf of the people on multiple occasions. Time and time and time again, the people have complained. They've talked bad about Moses, about Aaron, about Miriam, about Joshua, and they are complaining almost incessantly to Moses about how bad God is for redeeming them from slavery to bring them to their own promised land. Now, if this were me, I think I would have snapped long before Moses snapped, right? This was just me being honest here, If I have to hear you complain over and over and over and over and over and over, and y'all are dying because you're complaining so much, God's trying to teach you a lesson about humility, about trust, about faith, and you're just not getting it, it's going to wear you down. Now, specifically, what God commanded Moses to do was to speak to the rock in front of the assembly, in front of the congregation, the assembled folks of the Israelites. In verse 10, "And then Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, 'Hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of this rock?'" Now, immediately we have some concern, because that tone was not the tone that God used. God did not condemn the people for this complaining from their mindset. He'd been through it all before. They had been killed off from various plagues and serpents and even from enemies to trying to get them to humble themselves. But God seems to be trying to bear with them through this particular instance. So what we find is before he continues, this mindset of where Moses is inwardly focused. "Must we bring water from this rock for you?" He misplaced who actually was giving water from this rock. Was Moses the one who was responsible to bring water forth from the rock? Absolutely not. If he walked over to any random rock and he tapped it with his rod, it wouldn't just produce water. The one that commanded him to do that was the Lord. So he's obviously having a little bit of a problem here, continuing with what the Lord told him to do. Verse 11, "And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice, and water came out abundantly. The congregation drank and their livestock." Now, the water still came forth from that rock. I believe, probably most obviously, because the Lord still needed to give his people water. That was their necessity. But there was a problem in what was being done, because the emphasis was not placed on the Lord blessing the people with this gift. It was on Moses providing water for them. Now here in verse 12, "The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, 'Because you did not believe in me.'" That's how the Lord viewed what just took place. "To uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore," here's the consequence, "you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. These are the waters of Meribah, where the people of Israel quarreled with the Lord, and through them he showed himself holy." Now, this seems a bit harsh, I understand. The emphasis was not placed on the Lord, it was placed on Moses, and in a way, in a very small figure, he was casting himself above the power of Jehovah in this instance. He was almost making himself an idol, as if he was the actual redeemer of the people from Egypt. And that was a major, major problem. And Moses, although he was strong-willed, he had to accept the consequences for what he actually did by placing the emphasis in the wrong area and in the wrong place. Let's look over in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 3. Deuteronomy 3, beginning in verse 23. "And I pleaded with the Lord at that time, saying, 'O Lord God, you have only begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do such works and mighty acts as yours? Please let me go over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, the good hill country and Lebanon.' But the Lord was angry with me because of you, and would not listen to me. And the Lord said to me, 'Enough from you. Do not speak to me of this matter again.'" Now, I can just pause right there. I've only had a few instances where someone's told me, "I don't want to hear you ask me about that one more time." And every time someone told me, do not bring that up again. I knew the matter was completely resolved. If I open my mouth one more time, it'd be even worse than the beginning. What this shows us, although God showed that there was a consequence for what Moses did, he was still looking out for the best interest of Moses. He was looking out for his child because he knew what the people would do when they crossed over that land. They knew how they would behave. At this point in time, Joshua was the individual who was going to take over for Moses and be able to settle those issues. And the mission of Moses now was complete. So looking at the will, the strong will of Moses, seeing him as someone that thought that he was prepared to redeem the people by killing the Egyptian, he was definitely, definitely strong-willed. As someone who was willing to stick his own neck out there for the behalf of the people as an intercessory partner, it's a noble thing for him to do. And then finally, he was strong-willed because he made a stumble, he made a mistake, and he temporarily placed himself above God, and he had to live with the consequences of his actions. That's a small snippet of what Moses did. There is so much more here. We've only just reached the beginning of this well of the life that is Moses. One interesting study for you, by the way, if you're interested to learn more about him, his life is divided within three different sections, three different time frames. When he was a child, when he wanted to redeem the people from the Egyptian lords, when he was out as a shepherd, and then when he was the shepherd of God's flock. So a great way to study his life is to see his growth from being someone that was strong-willed to being humbled, to being humble before the people and before God. So if you want to continue your own study, that's one way to do so. I want to encourage all of us tonight to make sure that we know about Moses and to learn from his example, to know that he was someone that was strong-willed, that put his foot down for good and for bad, unfortunately. But we can learn from that instance and be more faithful as time continues on. So if anyone has a need to come forward tonight for any reason, we're here for you. Stand and we sing.